The Zach syntax to define data mesh is a decentralized data architecture, and every team treats data as a product. Every team got the domain of their data, and their product is basically a table, and they provide the result to someone else. That could be a business part or another team inside your company. So we have got vertical team, and when I speak about vertical team, is someone that works really close with the business. So it could be marketing media team, sales team, and inside the team, there are both data engineer and data analytics.
You're listening to the Data Flowcast, where we unlock the secrets of mastering airflow for data engineering and AI.
Hey, Airflow community. Airflow 3 is here, and we are taking it on the road. Join the Astronomer Roadshow for an exclusive deep dive into the latest features, hands-on demos, and expert insights, all in a city near you. We'll be in London in May, New York City in June, Sydney in July, San Francisco in July, and Chicago in August. Don't miss your chance to connect with the Airflow community and get the inside scoop on what's next. Register now. The link is in the show notes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Data Flowcast. I'm your host, Marc Lomati, and today I'm super excited because I'm joined by Alberto Crespi, data architect at lastminute.com. How are you doing, Alberto?
I'm fine. I'm really glad to be here, Mark.
That's awesome. I'm very glad that you are here too, because we're going to go through very interesting topics today for that episode, especially regarding like why choosing Airflow over many different orchestrators, also a bit of data mesh. Actually, this is, I wouldn't say it's pretty new for me, but I don't know that much about data mesh. So I'm very interested by what you will say about this approach. And also we will highlight some interesting implementations at lastminute.com, such as how they use SQL sensors and other things that I'm sure you will be interested by. Without further ado, can you tell us more about what you do at lastminute.com, Alberto? What is your role and what is typically your day?
Yeah, I'm a data architect in lastminute.com, and I'm a team composed by 3 people, and we are in charge to choose the best practices and tools inside our department, and also data modeling, and we help all the other teams inside our department basically, and yes, when we find a tool, we will find a way to spread the knowledge inside all of the teams and find, as I said, the best practices and use them in the correct way.
Okay. So what teams are you working with? Like data engineers, data scientists, a mix?
Yes, I can say that we work from data platform engineers, so from the beginning, that bring the data inside our department, also network specialist, data engineer, data analyst is in our other in here in last minute. Data scientist is in another department, but we work also with them.
Okay, so very different profiles.
Yeah, all of the data world is wow. Attached. We are a tech company here in lastminute.com, and of course we sell company, we sell holidays, but our core business is a tech company.
Okay. I assume that it's a big responsibility for you to choose the right tool for the right team.
Yes, of course. So we have got help from others, but yes, I agree with you.
Tell me more. I think, so today you are using Airflow at lastminute.com, but I don't think it was the case it was not the case at the beginning, right? I think you introduced Airflow at some point. Can you tell us more about what orchestrators or what schedulers you were using before Airflow, and also why did you pick Airflow?
Yes, thank you for your question. Yes, I joined the company in 2020, and the organization of the company was different. So I don't want to blame no one, but at the beginning, I counted like 7 different orchestrators, starting from Rundeck, wow. Crontap, scheduler for the cloud, Azkaban, custom scheduler. So when we joined all of the teams, it was easy to understand that we needed one to rule them all. And we made a search on the market. We find Airflow. It was the beginning of the peak. I mean, because in 2022 was already the top of the market, Airflow. And we found that everything of our requirements were fit. So execute Java, execute Python, SQL integrated with our data warehouse because we had more than one. And Airflow fit really well and embraced it in step by step. But at the end, Airflow is able to do whatever all of the other scheduler did in the past.
And so you decided to go with Airflow in 2022, right?
We make a POC in 2020. Okay. In the 2022, we was at the migration ended. So all I think that 2021 was the full migration of all of the artifacts. Okay.
And did you feel that for the learning curve of Airflow was steep? Did you feel that it was hard to get started with Airflow? And you can be honest, by the way. Like, you can truly say what was your feeling when you started with Airflow?
Thank you to you, because when I started, I used all of your material and I learned. Thank you to you. And also in lastminute.com, we have got a learning path. So our newbie followed the learning path, and some video is from you. So maybe at the beginning it's different. It could be tough. But if someone is able to introduce you and you've got the infrastructure already deployed and you have got DAGs to copy paste and tasks to copy paste, and someone that can help you, is definitely easy. At the beginning, maybe there is some tasks that are complicated, not Airflow task, infrastructure, CI/CD testing, understand the network. That could be tough at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you would say like everything around Airflow, basically, like all the, I would say maybe like the DevOps part, like how do you scale Airflow? How do you implement your CI/CD pipeline? How do you like, everything around is maybe complex, especially when you want to run Airflow at scale.
Exactly. And also because we got a lot of teams in our department, and basically we are using just one instance or two instances, one of production and one on pre-prod production. Mm. So all of the teams schedule on the same and on the same environment. So we need all of this DevOps work, like you said, working properly.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting because like some people, I saw on the internet that some people feel that Airflow is difficult to scale, but the reality is Airflow scales, but you will get the same kind of issues that you will get with any other tools. Whenever you want to scale your tool, you have so many things to think about. Again, like in terms of your CI/CD, your resources, how you share your resources, how do you test your resources and so on. And that's why there is Astronomer if you want to manage that part for you. But still, it's always complicated to manage everything around the tool that you install and
because
run.
In Airflow, the different types of job that you can deploy are very wide.
Yep.
And maybe there are some SQL query that give the resources to the data warehouse, or maybe other one that use the resources. So it depends.
I agree. That's the most difficult part of having an orchestrator, right? It's that you have so many things that you can orchestrate, so many different things that you can orchestrate. So obviously it comes at some complexity.
Yes.
So I think can you tell us more about the way during our conversation before that episode, I think you mentioned the fact that you have horizontal and vertical teams and also you have implemented the data mesh approach for those teams. You know, like for the listeners that are not familiar with this concept, and actually I'm not that familiar with that concept too, can you explain how you've organized your teams and how Airflow fits into this data mesh architecture? Starting with what exactly is a data mesh for you?
Yeah, the exact syntax to define data mesh is a decentralized data architecture, and every team treat data as a product.
Okay.
And every team got the domain of their data. And their product is basically a table, and they provide the result to someone else that could be a business part or another team inside your company. And so we have got vertical team. And when I speak about vertical team, is someone that work really close with the business. So it could be marketing media team, sales team. And inside the team, there are both data engineer and data analytics, data analyst members. And after that, we got horizontal teams, like my team, data architecture, that provide, like I said at the beginning, best practices, to the detail, data modeling, whatever. Another team, like data platform, that is in charge to bring all of the data inside our platform. And also data governance, that do a lot of really tough work, like GDPR, naming convention, and lineage, grants, and blah, blah, blah. And so the vertical teams think and work just for the business, because all of the technicality has been helped by us, like we can say. And they do not bother about the platform, infrastructure, scaling. And they work close with the data analyst and also close to the business. And in our department, we got 12 teams, 13 teams, I could say. And we work more technical, so horizontal team, and more deep on the business aspect, the vertical team.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, and answering your second question, because every single team has got his domain, he has got a lot of sources, a lot of requirements. So maybe a finance team needs data from, 30 sources. And in their DAG, we need to put a SQL sensor. SQL sensor is our main task used in our company, because you need to understand when your data is ready and you can start with your transformation. So for example, the sales team, which is at the end, all the pipeline, I got a lot of SQL sensor to understand all of the sources that we have that are more than 200 are waiting for. And when they are ready, they could start. And this is really nice, because if you are able to see all of the pipelines coming from all of the different teams joined together, and the SQL sensor are, I could say, the mandatory task, because they orchestrated really well all of the stuff.
Okay, that's super interesting. Just to summarize, and you tell me if I'm wrong. So you have vertical teams that are close to the business, to the executives. So for example, the marketing. So we can imagine truly those teams are
silos.
Like silos.
Exactly.
So you have the marketing team, you have maybe, another team, whatever. And then you have the horizontal teams that are actually working across all of those vertical teams. And so they provide what those vertical teams need to work. Is that correct? Is that the right way to say it?
Yeah, exactly. If you try to on Google to write data mesh, that is exactly the image that you explain. Vertical, like silos from finance, okay, sales, whatever you want, and horizontal, the team that provide the infrastructure and the best practices to work.
Okay, and then you have like data products that you define as a table in a database or like a file. Or is that correct?
Exactly. A data product is something that you are supposed to be tested, and there are data that are fine, are good. And it could be a table, could be a report, could be a dashboard, or even if an Excel or a Google Sheet, or also a Slack channel. What is meaningful is that the data is correct, and you provide the exact data to the other team.
Okay. And so truly, like, what those vertical teams care about are the data products. Like, they don't care that much about the architecture and so on. They just care about if the data is available or not, if the spreadsheet is available or not, and so on.
Every data engineer is different. A lot of them are enthusiastic, so they want to know about how Airflow works. They want to know which cloud we are working on. But it's because people are curious and want to understand. But to be honest, they could work without nothing about a lot of stuff.
Okay. And so can you tell me more about the SQL sensor? I know that you just touched on it, but can you give me just like a very specific example maybe of where it is useful for you?
Yeah, for example, like I said, the sales team get data from all of the other teams, because for the yesterday sales report, that was one of the more important report. For example, the Google data came just once a day at the 7 a.m. from Sam from Web Analytics. I'm saying about this stuff. And so where the data is coming at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., we want to provide as fast as possible the result of the yesterday sales. Of course, some data you have in real time, but in the morning, in a really close time, all of your ETL inside Airflow need to execute really quickly. And when you got all of your dependencies, you put in your SQL sensor, you're able to understand which are your requirements and which are your sources. And we create this custom operator called SQL sensor with Slack notification. And maybe if a data engineer is commuting by work or is in a meeting, he's able to check inside his Slack channel which is the sources that is not available yet. And he's able to drive to the people that need to solve this problem, or just because he understands it's not his fault. And of course, you got a dashboard, but a Slack notification in this case is far more helpful. And yes, you can think that there are few sources, but at the end of the day, many teams have got 20, 30, 40 sources inside that SQL sensor because they need to understand, they need to wait for all of the dependencies.
This episode is brought to you by Astronomer, creators of Astro, the leading fully managed Airflow service designed for the modern data stack. Whether you're orchestrating large language models, implementing a data mesh architecture, or streamlining complex workflows, Astro empowers your team to focus on innovation, not infrastructure. To see how you can maximize Airflow's potential within your data ecosystem, visit www.astronomer.io.
I have many questions for you. So for the SQL sensor, do you wait for an entry? So do you have one table, like one SQL sensor per table?
No, we have one SQL sensor for many tables.
So you have one sensor that checks multiple tables.
Exactly, yes. We have got right now, we can call a semaphore table. And in this table, there are all the start and end or the of the previous ETL. And you can write, I started, I finished, I can finish with warning. And the result, so the people that use the data check on the table if the data are available or not available. And the SQL sensor in some cases run every minute, in some cases every 5 minutes or 15 minutes. It depends on use case, need to be really real time or is useless having the report at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m.
Okay. And that sensor is the first task of your DAG?
A lot of time, yes. In 95% of cases, yes.
Okay, so you have a DAG that runs, what, daily, and then you have the SQL sensor that's going to check every minute or every 5 minutes or every 15 minutes?
Yes, exactly, yes.
Okay.
For the daily DAG, yes.
Okay, I have to ask, did you get any performance issue because of that? Or not really?
We had performance issue, but we needed to improve the scheduler resources for CPU and RAM of the scheduler. We are up and running with two schedulers and we faced with issue, but we understand that was the scheduler, yes.
Okay, so that was because of the resources, like you didn't have enough resources to run all of those SQL sensors.
Yeah, I think that in certain times, the first team, so the data platform is not able to provide the data. And maybe it's really late. So at 10 a.m. in the morning and they provide yet data. All of the DAGs have been started and all of the SQL sensors are checking. The data is available, and there is a lot of tasks running and the scheduler have pain. So in that case, we need a lot of resources.
Okay, got it. That is super interesting. And what were you using before the SQL sensor? Or you just started with the SQL sensor right away? Did you use something else before?
It was hard because right now we are supposed to give our report early in the morning. Before this, the report was delivered in the afternoon or maybe late. So of course we will find a solution, but this is the quickest solution as possible. So if you do not lose time, it's important to have SQL sensor or something that check in a few seconds if the data is available.
You always used the SQL sensor, like right at the beginning you decided to do with the SQL sensor. Oh, okay.
Yes.
I thought that you were using something else before the SQL sensor. Okay. You mentioned that you've created a custom operator. So this SQL sensor is actually a custom operator. Right? So you have the SQL sensor with the Slack notification. So it's interesting because actually many people create their own custom operators. Many companies do that. Can you tell me more about one specific custom operator that I know you are using, because we've talked about that allows you to execute something interesting?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm proud about that. For sure, it worked properly. I don't know. Because we have got legacy Java jar, and we need in some way to execute this code. And as all of you know, Airflow is based upon Python. And if you want to execute Java code, maybe you need to find another solution. But we tried. Mm-hmm. We tried in our team. We tried to create, I'm a little bit technical right now, but with Python, you can create a subprocess, and basically you are going to create a terminal, a bash, and inside mm-hmm. that terminal, you can execute a terminal command. And in that phase, we place the Java command to execute the jar. It could be weird because it's something unorthodox to execute a Java jar inside a Python frame scheduler. But at the end of the year and after 4 years, we haven't got any problem. It worked properly. Maybe it's some millisecond slower, but for sure it's robust. Yes, from as a data architect, maybe I'm not proud. As a result oriented, I'm really happy about that.
Look, I think some people will say it's okay to do that. Some people will say it's a bit exotic to do that. But I think at the end of the day, it proves one point, that Airflow is very flexible. Ultimately, you can do a lot with Airflow. And the reality, to your point, is when you are working in a company, obviously you have some tech debt that you need to deal with. And migration is definitely not something funny to do. And you have deadlines, you have a lot of things to do very fast and blah, blah, blah. So you just find the solutions that you can find as quickly as possible. And then when you have more time, then maybe you will improve those solutions. But again, I think that proves one point, that Airflow is flexible and you can do a lot with it, even executing Java code. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. Flexible is one of the main features of Airflow, for sure.
Do you create any other custom operators? Any custom operators that you can think of that could be interesting for the audience?
Something that I could mention, that we created a repository that all of our custom repositories are inside. It's managed by us, by the data architecture team, managed by merge request. This is important because if you got more than one team as a data engineer, you need to take care of all these customers that has been created, because they need to be resilient, they need to work properly, need to be tested, of course, because this code after that go in production. So what I suggest is to create a dedicated repository, centralized, with, of course, merge request, CICD, and all of the people can use that, but centralized as a repository.
Okay. Are you using dbt?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of dbt. Yes. We are trying to migrate, yes.
Okay. Are you using dbt with Airflow today?
Yes, right now, yes. Okay.
How?
Just the 5% of our transformation are in dbt. So we are at the beginning of our path. We are understanding which is the best way to schedule the dbt image, the dbt artifact. So we are in some way in trial and error phase, but definitely I'm a big fan of dbt. And in my mind, dbt and Airflow are close together. And I think this is amazing, using both of them.
And how are you using dbt with Airflow today? Are you using the bash operator or something else?
Right now, we are using a Kubernetes pod operator. So through the CI/CD, GitLab, we are using GitHub in our company, upload an image inside our artifact registry. And after that, we use a Kubernetes pod operator to execute that. Maybe we use another way, maybe a serverless option or something like that. And we got also a demo from astronomer team that have inside the platform dbt and Airflow custom operator. We have a follow-up on September. Right now in our company, we have so many custom operators. We will see in the future if we use them. But for sure, if we want to start from scratch, it's something usual to take a look at astronomer.
Yeah, so you got a chance to see Cosmos, right? Is that what
you're talking about? Exactly, yes.
Yeah. I think for the people that are listening, it obviously depends on your architecture and on a lot of things, but definitely if you are using dbt with Airflow today, I would recommend you to take a look at Cosmos. It's an open source project. You don't have to be an Astronomer customer to use it, and it will save you a lot of time to integrate dbt with Airflow, especially if you are using the bash operator or any other operators today, because I think that's the case with the Kubernetes pod operator that you are using. With dbt and Airflow, you don't see what's going on in your dbt project on the Airflow UI, right? You only see the Kubernetes operator, but you don't know what's going on in your dbt project when you run it. You have to look at the...
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's correct.
So this is what like Cosmos brings to you, that you have this lineage, this observability over your dbt project right into Airflow. But again, depends on the way you need to run dbt and so on. I guess, Alberto, I have a question for you. How you mentioned that you are working with different teams, and I imagine that those teams have different skills, right? Like some are data scientists, some are data analysts, data engineers, and so on. Do they all create data pipelines, or do you have a framework for them so they can just create data pipelines but in a very restricted way, I would say, or like with some guidelines at least? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, at the beginning, we create a template.
Okay.
But after 1 year, no one used templates so far.
Okay.
Yeah. And yes, right now we've got a huge competencies inside our department. So data engineer and data analyst are able to create DAX without problem. At the beginning, what we did in my teams is to create the first DAX together in peer programming with everyone and understand exactly what they pain. Because someone has got already Python skills, someone not. And in peer-to-peer programming, you are able to understand. Not so many lessons, one or two. And after that, they are able to create an amazing DAG. Because at the end of the day, a lot of data analysts create a lot of DAGs, but it's just a copy-paste of a lot of tasks. And even if they are coming for R and not from Python, they are able to create a really good DAG. There is one colleague, for example, which is an ABI expert, A-B testing expert, sorry. And he created an amazing DAG, making Python script inside our Confluence page, getting information from the data warehouse, and at the end, write the result of the A-B testing in a back to our Confluence page. This is an amazing result from a data analyst because he just write Python and he got all of the network opened and the infrastructure ready, and he was able to create a really great result basically without being a data engineer.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Wow. Great. I think for the people that are listening to us, do you have any advices regarding Airflow or maybe like the experience that you had implementing that data mesh architecture? And do you have any advices for them? Maybe one or two?
Okay, hard question. The first point that me and my colleagues in data architecture think is valuable is speak with the team. So communication is the key. When you understand their requirements, the first point is become easier, because without speaking with all the people, you're not able to understand what they do, first of all, with the remote working, all of the other cool way to work, but the communication is harder. And understand the people, and yes. And after that, of course, there are videos, there are a lot of tools to understand. A little bit of peer programming together can help us to understand the level of the people, can understand you if the people understand how to create DAGs or other stuff in our work. And yes. And after that, of course, in the data engineer world, there are some passionate tech lover. And if you want to try something, start with some tech lover, start with him, and after that, the spread of the information go in the department, and after that, people came to you and said, okay, I want to migrate this, and it will come as soon as possible after that, because if something's cool and work properly, a lot of people want to join and start to use them, like I said, as quick as possible.
That's true. I think the maybe one of the key things that you said is communication. I think communication is, to your point, right? Like communication is key, especially with the stakeholders. You need to make sure that you align on the same objectives between the engineers and the people that are waiting for your data pipelines to be ready and get the things that they want. So it's very important to communicate on what is possible and what is not possible. So I love your advices. Thank you so much, Alberto, for that. I guess one last question. Unfortunately, because we are already at the end of the episode. What is the best way for folks to get in touch with you?
Okay, I'm on LinkedIn, great. Alberto Crespi, dataarchnet in lasmino.com, and it's the best way to chat with me.
Here we go. Thank you so much, Alberto.
Thank you to you, Mark.
It was a wonderful
pleasure
to have you. Yeah, thank you. And I'm sure that the listeners are enjoying that episode. Thank you so much. See you for the next one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Flowcast, Mastering Airflow for Data Engineering and AI. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.